You're listening to the Tarlest End podcast, the only Reading podcast by fans for fans. Hello and welcome to the Tarlest End podcast episode 3. My name's Dan Wimbush, otherwise known as Wimb. Welcome to the latest in our weekly podcast devoted to all things Reading Football Club. As always, the song you've just heard at the top of the show was Biscuit Men by Violet Class, who are a local band and Reading fans. If you want to hear any more of their music or check them out live, head to www.violetclass.com or follow the lads on Twitter at Violet Class. Joining me again are Westy and Williams, Mr. Johnny Williams and Alan West. How are you both?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, well, thank you. Not enjoying the weather at the moment. Bit of a rainy day today, but
no, the weather has turned. Summer is over. pack away your shorts. Get the jumpers out. It's going to be a long one.
The football season's on. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. So we'll just roll straight onto it then, guys. The 100% record's gone after a 1-1 draw at Bolton. My first reaction is obviously that we need to sack the manager, change the squad, move out the stadium, change the club's name to the Reading Royals Tigers FC Super Mega Team. And just all start over again. An over-exaggeration?
I think slightly. I mean, you know.
Come on.
I think, you know, we got
let's
the Thames
Valley. Let's be controversial here
The Thames Valley. We should encompass all the teams in the Thames Valley. You know, bigger catchment area.
We should merge with Oxford and become the Thames Valley Royals. No one's ever thought of that.
No. I thought he was reading off Hobnob there.
That's one of the more measured posts you get on there. In all seriousness, though, we got a point up at Bolton. Bolton haven't lost at the Reebok for a year. Not a bad result. It was certainly Myers. I think we were talking on last week's show. Me and Johnny were both sort of saying we'd like a point. I know you were saying you want to try and make a statement with all three, but
I think, though, we both got what we wanted. I think Reading went to win the game. They didn't, and we walked away with a draw, which we said we'd be happy about. All I was saying is we don't want to go up there and play for a draw, and we didn't. And unfortunately, we didn't get all 3 points. But a point at Bolton, a year they haven't been beaten at home. I think they're going to be there or thereabouts at the end of the season. It's a good yardstick for us.
I think the other thing is, both the teams we've played, their fans, you know, scouting around what they've been saying as well, they think the same of us, you know. Ipswich came away a little bit unlucky. They thought maybe could have had a point, but they recognised we were a good side. And Bolton did the same thing, you know, in the second half. We absolutely dominated them. And they said, we'll probably be up there at the end of the season as well. So it's good that not only our fans are positive about it, but also the reaction of the teams we played as well.
The great thing is about it, that is Championship football. Ipswich and a Bolton game, Championship football, we could have lost it, could have won it, walked away with a draw from one, and we won the other.
Absolutely.
And it'll be like that all season.
Absolutely. Right, well, going back to the start then, the team, McCarthy, Bridge, Pierce, Morrison, Gunter, Guthrie, Karachan, Drentha, McEnough, McCleary, and Nick Blackman, with Hal Robson-Kanu, Danny Williams, and Adam Lafondre all making appearances off the bench. Couple of big changes then to the team. The Joby McEnough one coming in was one we sort of speculated on, and Charles said as well he could have seen that happening. The one I don't think anyone expected was Nick Blackman coming in to replace Lafondre up front. What did you make of the choices?
Well, personally, I wasn't overly surprised, because we said about Lafondre up front, his own in the first game against Ipswich, he was poor. He didn't make no impact on the game whatsoever, and the ball kept bouncing off him. I think he's looked at Podgrebniak and thought, well, he hasn't done it. I was thinking today as I was walking around, I thought, you know, if you watch Podgrebniak against Man City at the back end of last season, I thought he was excellent up there against Man City, held the ball, give him a problem. He should be doing that more regularly, and he's not. So he's given Nick Blackman a chance. I think Nick Blackman's the sort of player who will make a big impact this year. A lot of people I've seen on websites slating him off, saying he's 23, he's not good enough, he's come up from League One. But he had a massive climb to fame last year to get into the Premier League.
So.
It was a steep learning curve. And he's been a good striker in League One, where he's got the pace. He's big and strong. He can hold a ball better than Lafondre. Will he score as many goals? Time will tell. But I think, personally, if you're going to play one person up front, at the moment, I think he's the first choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the points you made. I wrote an article on Monday, 5 points that we learned from the Bolton game. And one of them was that I couldn't understand the hate for Nick Blackman. You read Twitter before the game and you thought we'd selected the groundsman to play up front.
Yeah.
You know, not this guy. I pointed out Nick Blackman is the most expensive striker Reading have ever signed.
Yeah.
More expensive than Leiter, Doyle, Kitson, Nairn. He's there. He's had 3 starts, all in the Premier League for a struggling side. And suddenly everyone's saying, oh, he's useless, he's rubbish, why is he playing, yada, yada, yada. I thought it was very OTT, and I'm glad for him that he got the penalty. It wasn't the best performance in the world. I'm not suddenly saying he's going to be the next Shane Long, but it was a great starting point. Johnny?
Yeah, I'd agree with most of those points. I think perhaps we still don't have that striker who I feel confident can act in that role up front. You know, I think Nick Blackman is probably the best option for those away games at the moment, because Pogrebniak, well, clearly his heart's not in it. Clearly Adkins just doesn't think he wants to be part of this team at the moment. Lafondre, for those long away games where you're going to be likely on the back foot, I don't think he sees him as the option. So I think Blackman's the right choice at the moment, but as many Reading fans would think at the moment, I think we do need one more in the squad.
Certainly room for improvement in that area. Otherwise, just generally on the team selection, I was happy, because once again it showed that Nigel Adkins doesn't have any favourites.
No, it's something we levelled at the last manager. Yeah. You'd pick a team and they'd stay the same no matter what. Ledgerwood players that would play no matter what performance they put in. I personally, we said already, McEnough, we thought he'd come in. I didn't think Robson Carney was fit last week. He didn't look fit at all. And Blackman, at 23, he's got plenty of room to improve.
Yeah.
And when you looked at the bench on Saturday, I thought, my God, that is a hell of a bench for a Championship side.
Massively.
If you looked at the team last year and compared to this year, we've certainly got a better team now than we had then. So I think all good things. Like I say, we took the game to Bolton. In the first 15 minutes, we kept them really quiet. Fans went quiet. The goal, I would say, I thought was probably, if you look at it, Guthrie-wise, I think he should have stopped the cross. I've said it a lot.
Yeah.
Stop the cross, stop the goal. There was two of them there. None of them seemed to do a lot about it. Good header, but we should have stop that out.
The marking was poor, and again, in that same article that I mentioned earlier, it's one of those points that the defence is still new. It's very new as a unit of five.
And young.
Yeah, very young. I mean, if you look at the players in there, McCarthy, you know, played half of last season. You've obviously got the new boy in Bridge. Gunter was in at the team all last year, and Pearce and Morrison haven't picked up a load of games together.
No.
So that's going to take time. I think we've got a listener questioning later saying, are you worried that we'd keep conceding early? And I think it's just one of those things that they'll take time to gel, but when they get there, the potential is there to have a great back five.
Can I put a question here?
Yeah, go for it.
To Johnny, whoever wants to answer it. If you look at the goals Reading have scored, does that worry you a little bit? Because if you look at it, we've scored an own goal, we scored a goal from outside the box that's hit someone's foot and gone in, and we scored a penalty. Otherwise, we haven't scored a goal in open play, if you know what I mean. I know Fondra had a great chance to score, he hasn't. What's your thoughts on that? Do you look at it as, well, it's good that we're winning games and not really carving out decent chances, and when it clicks, we will. How do you look at it?
I think you have to look at it in that way, and if you go back to the Ipswich game, we had a lot of chances, especially in the early part of the second half before Guthrie scored, where particularly McCleary and Drentha were linking up really, really well. Robson Carney had a couple of chances which he missed. Maybe on another day, if he was fully fit, he'd have put them in. I think we're creating the chances, but we perhaps don't have that finisher, and it's a bit of catch 22 because Lafondre is the finisher, but can he work enough for the team?
Not the best. Didn't take his chance very well on Saturday, did he?
The keeper had a blind face, to be fair to him.
Possibly should have done better though. Alex Pearce as well, very unlucky not to grab a goal. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I'd argue that I don't think we're creating many clear-cut chances, but I think the team are doing well. I think they did well under McDermott as well. They get themselves into positions where they're winning free kicks. They're getting in the right areas to cross the ball. But in terms of volume of chances, I said this last season, I said how many chances did Pogrebniak actually have. I still don't think, you know, there's not, oh, wow, we've had 10 shots on target a game.
No.
We're creating two or three really good ones and a lot of scratchy chances. So, but I think that, again, that will come in time as the midfield gels and whatnot.
But I think that's something that comes with the slow build-up that Adkins is putting in as well, because it's not like in the McDermott area where we try and, you know, we soak up all the pressure and then hit him on the counter.
Yeah,
it's very much, you know, we'll pass it, probe it, and just see what we can do. And it doesn't matter if they've got 10 men behind the ball, we'll try and eke out the chances anyway. So we're not going to get as many clear-cut chances or runs on goal or perhaps shots on goal as we got. But I think those chances will tell more when they finally come.
Do you think anyone can make a case for Lafondre starting every week? Because if you look at the last two, three seasons, whenever he's come off the bench, he's scored goals. Whenever he started, he hasn't. Even Lafondre can't make a case for starting.
Yeah, I think you raised the point last week saying that one of his great attributes last year was, and the year before, coming on against tired defences. And just that, therefore, his lack of... Well, he hasn't got a lack of pace. He's not slow. But you know what I mean? He hasn't got that still over 90 minutes. Whereas if he comes on for 20 minutes against a tired defence, he can get that extra yard of space. I've said it before, I'm not convinced about him as a lone striker in the Championship and above.
No.
Could he surprise me and develop? Absolutely. For a long time, I didn't think Shane Long was going to do it. And then, obviously, he burst onto the scene and you know, has become the player he is now. So he can do it, but you know, Lafondre isn't young. He's not... You can't see a massive leap coming from him.
No.
But, you know, rule it out? No. But
yeah, that's another case for Nick Blackman, though. I mean, at 23, when did Long burst onto the scene?
About
24?
Same age, yeah.
About 24. So I'm saying, so Nick Blackman's got plenty of improvement in him, and if he can go above them and do well, and I hope he sticks with him for a couple of games, give him a chance. because you don't want him dropping him after two or three matches and trying to swap it around.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come on to the team we sort of see for Watford a bit later on, but just sort of rounding up the draw at Bolton. What did you make of Bolton? They're a team that are fancied to be up there, you know, narrowly missed out on a playoff spot last year. Did you look at it and think, this division's going to be hard this year? Or did you look at it and think, well, you know, we could and should have won it, one of the hardest places in the Championship?
I think when you look at the first three games that we played with Ipswich, Watford and Bolton, those are teams that you think could be around there, but equally, well, probably not Bolton and Watford, but possibly Ipswich, they could also be bottom half of the table. So it tells you it's a very difficult league, and probably the top 16, top 20 teams, you'd be happy getting a point at their ground and you'd be very happy winning at home. So I think it does tell you that it's going to be difficult this year, as we all knew, because it's a cliche, but the Championship is a very, very competitive league.
I think it's quite telling, actually, if you look at a division, the teams at the bottom four are the bottom four I'd expect nearer the end of the season. So it's sorting itself out quite quickly, I think, the Championship. But like I said, when you play in a Championship, you have games that you'll win and think we could have lost it, and you'll lose games that you think we should have won it. And that's the great thing about a Championship. You don't get in a Premier League.
Yeah, and Bolton have got a very strong squad as well. They're clearly still using those parachute payments well. When you can think that they've loaned out Sordell to Charlton, you know, that shows the strength. Obviously, they brought in Spearing from Liverpool at a decent game, and they've got people like Ngo. And
they're very steady. They've got some very steady sort of top Championship, bottom of the Premier League players. And this is what Nick Blackman come up against on Saturday as well. People forget this. Up front against two players that have got good Premier League experience.
Yeah.
He won't have them every week.
Well, we'll have a quick chat with Charles about the game as well. But if you want to have your say, Becca's wrote her match report and match ratings on the website. Now, go along there. You can also vote for your man of the match on the game, and that'll all help us in our player of the month and player of the season vote. So head over there now. But without further ado, let's take a chat with Get Reading reporter Charles Watts.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Charles, thanks for taking the time to join us again. How have you been?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad. We're just looking out of a great wet window, and there's about to be international football on the telly, so mood is downcast.
It's getting grey and
wet. Yeah, exactly that. But no,
I'm actually a little bit excited about the England Scotland game. I can barely bring myself to watch England friendlies, but I don't know. I just feel like this one might be a bit different.
You need to get out more, Charles. You've been watching Reading two games in, and he's already searching for any other football, anything else you can find. Had your main team kick off this weekend.
I know. God, I can't believe that's all started again. Although saying that, it's most been a typically depressing summer in that regard. I can't believe we haven't spent one penny yet.
You're well out the big signing soon, a free transfer from Marseille or something like that.
Well, we've already done that, and that's the that's the one signing we got from Auxerre, a free transfer, a striker. I think I saw someone on Twitter say that when you go and buy a programme on Saturday, you'd have spent more than Arsenal have in the whole summer.
Yeah, well, you are listening to the Tarlhurst End and Arsenal podcast. switching to that lesser side, Reading Football Club. We've been over it a bit at the top of this show, but what did you make of the 1-0 draw at Bolton this weekend?
I thought it was a decent result. It was kind of similar to Ipswich in some regards, wasn't it? It was a slow first half, not really anything happening, to be honest. I think they were quite fortunate for it to only be 1-0. But second half is just a bit of a different team, really. And probably looking at it at the end, a little bit disappointed not to take all 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, the couple of big team changes. I mean, we spoke about it last week. You said you thought Joby McEnough might come in.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big surprise one was Nick Blackman. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that one coming. What did you make of his performance?
I certainly didn't see that coming, by the way. But having spoken to Nigel during pre-season, he said to me times, if Nick Blackman wasn't suspended for the Ipswich game, he would have started. And I didn't really believe him, to be honest, but maybe he was telling the truth. After all, he had a tough game, didn't he, Nick? I mean, first half, probably safe to say, wasn't at his best. He was very isolated up there. Up top, the midfield weren't really supporting him, and so everything he had his back to goal, and the ball was bouncing off him a little bit. I mean, his touch wasn't great, and if you're leading the line by yourself, that's not ideal, is it? You need to sort of control the ball well and bring everyone into play, but fair play to him. I mean, he got the penalty, grabbed the ball. There's no, he wasn't going to let anyone else have that. And it was a great penalty. And after the goal, he certainly improved, I thought, after that. And his touch was better. He had a couple of nice touches and brought a couple of the midfield lads into play. And I was actually a little bit surprised he went off what he did, because he was just beginning to play well.
Charles, how many penalties would you say we should have had on the day?
Quite a few. To be fair, there was no television screens where I was, so I didn't see any replays. But I mean, it sounds like the Royston Drenthe one was a dive. I mean, didn't seem to be any issue with that. And Nigel said that Royston went in and apologised to referee after the game. But I would kind of like to see that again from where I was. I figured the referee was going to give a penalty. It looked stonewall from where I was, but obviously it wasn't. But there was one for Joby in the second half. It looked like it was a cross came in from the right and he was running in at the back post. Just looked like he was going to tuck it away. And there was a clear shove in his back. You could see it from where I was. It just completely pushed him over just as about to finish. And I was really surprised there wasn't one given for that. But at the other end as well, Bolton could have had a couple. There was at least one clear handball, possibly two. So kind of, I suppose you say the old adage of even themselves out over the 90 minutes. But yeah, there could have been more than one.
Yeah, point and fair result in the end, though.
I think so, and I don't think anyone would be too disappointed with that. I mean, would you sort of going up to Bolton? I think one of the teams were going to be challenging up there from promotion. So to come away from that with a point, it's not too bad.
Charles, any movement on transfers this week? Obviously, Mariappa is still AWOL, and we're looking at a new striker possibly. Have you heard anything around the camp?
There's nothing new from my end, I'm afraid. I mean, it was sort of scratching around trying to find out everything, but I'm just coming up against a brick wall all the time. There's either nothing going on, which I don't believe that. I think there certainly is stuff going on, but they're just keeping it very, very well hidden, and it's just not coming out at either end. Normally, you get it leaking out from, you know, if it's not from Reading, you'll start hearing stuff from the other club and from people close to the other club, but it's just really nothing going on at the moment. All the rumours seem to be starting on Twitter and spreading, but, you know, I see these names that sort of pop up from these various Twitter accounts and you kind of...
The in-the-know brigade.
Yeah, exactly, and you just take it all with a pinch of salt and today, Kenwyn Jones and things like that, and I'm not too sure on that one. I just can't really see Kevin Jones coming around, and I'm not sure Nigel Atkins would want him in the first place. So there's certainly stuff going on, and I would expect more than one signing to come in before the transfer deadline day, but who it's going to be, I have no idea. In terms of going out as well, I mean, I was surprised again that Mariappa wasn't involved against Bolton. I thought he was going to be, had a good chat with Nigel at the training ground last Thursday, and the way he was talking, I was expecting him to be involved, but not to be. We got a picture, actually, our photographer got a photo of him sitting looking very glum in the stands, Mariappa on Saturday, sitting in the front row with Hopakpan and Stuart Taylor, and he didn't look too impressed to be sitting on that side of the advertising hoardings.
Did he have a Fulham top on at the time?
He didn't have a Fulham top on, no. But whether he does in a couple of weeks, we'll have to wait and see. But I mean, I hope he doesn't. I really hope he stays. I'm sure you probably do as well. I mean, it just doesn't really make too much sense to me to let a player of that quality go. But we'll have to wait and see, I suppose.
It's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way, though, because if he stays at the team too long, he's going to be the one that wants to move.
Yeah.
And or if he's already going to move and then nothing happens, and you're just going to be left with a really expensive centre-back just sat being fourth choice. It doesn't seem like a good idea for either party for him to be out of the team. So either commit to him or sell him.
It just doesn't add up, does it? I mean, it, like you're saying, it just doesn't sit right that he's not involved at all. For me, there just seems like there must be something going on, and or the club must be willing to let him go, and then sort of looking around now for the best deal. But I don't know. I mean, that's just, again, me thinking outside the box. I haven't been told that, or there hasn't been any hints to that from anyone at the club either. So I think we'll just have to wait and see on that one. But I wouldn't be surprised if he does possibly end up going out, because let's face it, it'll get a good couple of mil for him at least, and that money could be put to use elsewhere.
Well, fair enough. We'll obviously keep tuned to get Reading throughout the week, just if there are any deals and movements. Mm-hmm. Next game, Watford at home. They smacked six past Bournemouth at the weekend. What are your thoughts on the game? Is this going to be a tough one where we're going to be lucky to get all 3 points, or should this be very much, 3 points?
Well, I think it's certainly not going to be the latter. It's going to be one hell of a tough game. I was speaking to a colleague of mine over at a Watford newspaper, and he was saying today that they haven't even hit second gear yet this season, which you sort of look at their results and you like, think, oh my God, really? Apparently, for the first half against Bournemouth were the better side, and then Watford just sort of exploded in the second half. And in the wins against Birmingham in the league, and I think it was Bristol Rovers, wasn't it, in the cup? Again, they had good sort of 20-minute periods where they got the goals, but apart from that, they weren't at their best. So, I mean, he seems to say that they start quickly and then fade in the second half. And looking at Reading's performances so far, it's like the polar opposite. So I think, once again, you never know, it could well be a Reading trailing at half time and then getting a draw and a draw of the win after the break. So we'll have to see. I was looking on the betting sites today, actually. I think it was something like 25-1 for Reading to be losing at the break and to win it at full time. And I think I might have a cheeky couple of quid on that.
Sounds like a McDermott side, doesn't it, when we go?
Very much a McDermott template of things. Right, well, just moving on then. What can we expect from you over the coming week? What's coming up in the paper? And I see you did a bit of a Twitter web chat today. How did that go?
Yeah, that was the first one. I was sort of feeling it out, really, to see how it went, using sort of Twitter as a medium to do it. And it went well, I thought. It certainly kept me busy for an hour. There wasn't everyone seemed to get involved, and there was plenty of questions, mostly transfer related, which I felt a little bit bad about, because at the moment there's not really much to meet coming from my end, because I keep coming up against brick walls. But it certainly shows there's an awful lot of interest in the transfer market. So it'll be interesting to see how these web chats do when the window slams shut on September the 2nd.
Did you get any stick? John used to get loads. So.
No, I didn't yet. Everyone's been particularly nice to me, so I'm still waiting for it all to kick off, because I've been pre-warned that it can, but I think I'm probably still in the honeymoon period, let's say.
Very much so. Right, well, we'll get you to nail your colours to the mast then before we let you go. What's your score prediction for the weekend?
I've gone for 3-2.
Ooh,
I think
Reading?
I think, yeah, Reading. I think we're going to see goals.
Take that. I'd enjoy that. Right, well, where can people follow you on Twitter and on the website?
They can follow me at Charles underscore Watts on Twitter, and log on to Get Reading, and I will try and keep you as up to date with all the latest news as possible.
Fantastic. Thanks very much for joining us again, Charles. We'll speak to you next week.
All right, no worries, boys. Speak to you next week.
Cheers to that.
Yeah, bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Thanks very much to Charles, and obviously we'll hopefully speak to him next week. Hopefully a bit more transfer news, getting closer to the window. Now we're all excited. Jim White's going to be constantly phoning the Reading training ground to find out what's going on. No?
Camp Town, no. Car park.
Yeah, we were going down to be in the background of the shots with the Sky Sports News lads.
Yeah.
Someone's
got to work though.
Oh, I didn't work for Zonda in the back of that as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Right, well, as we mentioned, talking to Charles, we've got Watford on Saturday. You know, as we spoke to him, they're looking in fantastic form. Any team that puts six past anyone is not a bad side. Obviously made the playoff final last year, didn't quite make it over the line, but it looks like they've, you know, like Reading, they bounced back pretty quickly. Mm. I'm a bit nervous about this one. Recent home games against Watford haven't gone particularly well either.
I've been some drab 0-0, so I remember them. Well, I don't want to remember them, but I do.
Well, last time in the Championship, the Watford game was the low point of the season. I think we got absolutely gubbed 2-0 at home, and you just thought, this team's going nowhere. And then, you know, what do I know? We went and win the title. But it's weird, because in the year we've been away, Watford have been transformed completely. We're going to chat to John Mooney in a minute, who's a Watford blogger and podcaster. He'll give us a bit more on it, but... You know, overnight, Watford have gone from one of these also-ran teams fighting out at the bottom of the Championship to genuine promotion contenders. And at the moment, my brain can't handle it. But, you know, it looks like they're going to be up there and be one of our big rivals this season.
Well, they've made a hell of a lot of change to that club, haven't they, over the course of 2 or 3 years? I mean, Zola's come in over there, and they've brought in a lot of foreign players, and a lot of players that probably you wouldn't have heard of, but they seem to have got them gelling. I'm surprised they've bounced back quite so well from the playoff defeat, because there's normally a little hangover period, but it's not happened. And they do look good, but I would question who they've really played so far. We'll see better of them, I think, on Saturday. We'll see. Again, it's another good test for Reading. It's another good yardstick for them.
What would you do team-wise? Would you put Lafondra back in? Just stick with Nick Blackman?
No, I wouldn't put Lafondra back in.
I think you've got to stick with Nick Blackman. He scored a goal. He's got every right. He's got the shirt. And I think while we talked about Adkins rotating the team, putting out the best side, like Westy said earlier, if you take Blackman out of the team now, home game, because his first home game, because he was suspended for the first game, I think that could, affect his confidence. Yep. So I think you've got to keep him in.
Yeah, would you put Robson Carney back in for McEnough?
It depends how fit he is. I didn't think.
I suppose he's got to come through this game as we're recording tonight as well for Wales.
So right, it depends how fit he is. If he's fully fit, then by all means, put him back in. I think it'd keep it pretty much as it was. He'd want to keep it fairly tight, I'd have thought, first half. We're going to try and keep the ball a lot again, and I think Watford play a similar sort of game, so it might end up being a drab 0-0. But it'd be good, again, it'd be a good yardstick. And we know Lafondre's more effective coming off the bench, so I'd rather see him last half hour, because that's where he scores his goals.
Yeah, scored a goal against a key goal at Watford in the second half last year. Great little flick. If he does that again, we'll be happy. If Reading don't win this game, obviously very early in the season, I don't say anyone's going to panic, but if they do get beat, would you be a little bit worried, or would you literally just write off?
I'd write it off totally. I think early season form, especially with Reading, what's going on, and Watford, what's going on there, you can't really say, okay, we lost to Watford, so they're going to finish above us. You know, you've got 43 other games to play. And with this early season form, you know, did Watford fancy 6-1 coming against Bournemouth? No. I'd argue, you know, they'd have been happy with a 2-0, 3-0. I think if we get a draw, if we lose but play well, if we win, we'll be happy. And it's only three games in, you've got 43 more games to prove to yourselves and prove to the fans that we will be up there.
The Championship is a slog, and Reading have got a big squad, and that's what I count at the end of the season. When there's a few injuries, after the summer period's over and it starts getting towards the winter, and there's a lot of games all of a sudden, Reading's squad will come through, and Wigan's squad will come through, and QPR's will, and they will be the ones up there. And teams like Watford, I don't know what sort of strength they've got in depth. If they lose Deeney, he might get sold before time comes for the transfer window to shut. So I think you've seen it before with Reading, when they won the league not so long ago, they come out of absolutely nowhere. And that seems to happen every season. So the big squad would be the teams that are at the top, and that's the way it's always going to be in the Championship, I'm afraid.
I'm glad they've lost Vidra, actually. He was a real player last year.
He's gone to a crowded West Brom front line.
Yeah.
Hopefully Shane Long will be so upset he's going to have to come back to Reading.
Same with Guilfi.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to be so upset at Tottenham. Yeah, we're getting both back. Okay, then, score predictions, both of you?
I agree with Charles. I think there's going to be a lot of goals. Perhaps not a 3-2, maybe a 2-2. Maybe even just a 2-1. It's going to be a very, very tight game, end-to-end, like the Ipswich game was. I think it's going to be another thrilling match.
Are you going to get off the fence and make a score prediction?
he said just about everything, man.
Yeah.
2-2.
2-2. Westy?
2-1, Reading.
2-1, Reading. I am also going to be in the slightly optimistic camp, and I'll go for a 2-1 Reading win as well. And I'm going to throw Royston Drenthe in as getting his first Reading goal.
Yeah, again, he was 12-1. I think to score the first goal this last week.
Tremendous value.
Yeah, and I'm bang on. I'm doing Morrison every single game, first goal scorer, and any time. I think I'll make a fortune.
Yeah, the amount of shots Drenthe takes, I think
he's
you hope that one goes into.
Exactly. Right. Well, to get a bit more on our visitors, we can speak to John Mooney from Watford Blog and Podcast from the Rookery End.
The view from the town end.
What do the opposition think?
John, thanks very much for joining us. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. How's things?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Bit wet and dreary. We've just said to our last guest, it's raining outside. There's international football on the telly, so drab and dreary all round. But you know, we'll try and lift it with some hearty Championship chat. If John's voice sounds familiar, it's because he's actually been on the show before, because John actually voices the Stings you hear throughout the show. So whenever you want to hear about us getting social or whatnot, that's John. So thank you very much for helping us out with that.
That's all right.
How long have you been, you're one part of, is it three of you that do from the Rookery End?
There's normally three of us, but we do expand, can be up to 10 Watford fans on our podcast, I suppose, depending on who sort of turns up.
There's 10 Watford fans?
Well, no, we have a nice 10 people. We only get 10 on. I have to, the other couple of thousand, I have to say, I'm sorry, maybe next time.
Oh, fair enough. You've been at the podcasting gig for a while. How did it all start for you guys?
Well, basically, I used to work in radio, I wanted to, Watford are in a place where we're just, like you guys, are just outside London. So London doesn't quite pay attention to us in terms of media unless something big happens. And then our local BBC radio station, we have five other local football clubs. So we have Luton, we have MK Dons, we have Wickham, Stevenage, and Watford as well. And so Watford fans don't sort of get the full amount that they should, that they sort of deserve, shall we say, from a radio output. So we decided to start doing From the Rookery End, and we get an iPhone and we sit in the pub and we chat, and then I take it back and I edit it up and we put it up on the for the world to listen to. So they go up. We only do them monthly. So yeah.
Brilliant. Don't mention the pub. These guys will start getting jealous. I mean, I've made a great cup of tea, but I can't compete with the pub. Hush up on that. We'll try and keep the trade secrets to ourselves. Right. Anyway, on to matters on the pitch. Watford's rise at the table last season and great start to this season coincided with the Pozzo family taking over the club. What have the Pozzos done to dramatically turn things around? We were just chatting before you came on, and
you know, we almost can't get our heads around it, because the last time we were in the Championship, you know, you were scrabbling against relegation, and suddenly it's all turned around.
Well, basically, the Pozzo family have owned Udinese for coming on 30 years, and they heavily invested in a network of scouting network that goes out around the world, and they sort of look at markets that aren't as sort of visible. So we've got players from Paraguay and from Czechoslovakia. So they're not the sort of often places where you hear players usually coming from. They apparently have spent about, in the last few years, 100 million euros buying players, but have sold 200 million worth of players. So their thing is to buy players and to sell players. Now, the thing is, from a Watford point of view, that's what we had to do to survive. You know, we had to sell Danny Graham for only 2.5 million. Marvin Sordell, we had to sell. You know, a minute a player gets on the radar, we had to sell them. So the Pozzos have come in with this big network and all these players who last year were on loan to us, and they did that because it was a technicality, which in terms of the time that they went from taking over us to when they had to start playing. And all the good players that we had on loan have re-signed, apart from Vidra, who's gone to West Brom. So they have this big pool of players. They did something. They took over Granada, I want to say, 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and took them up from a very low point in the pyramid in Spain. And they're in their third season now in La Liga. Again, just using these players that they can sort of they gather together. So all our new players. Apart from Lewis McGugan, who come from Forest, they've all come through the Pozzo network, and technically they've come from Udinese because they were the people who held their player rights.
John, for all the players you've had coming in the last couple of years from Granada and Udinese, it's perhaps one who's been at Watford a while longer, Troy Deeney, who's in the news at the moment. Got a hat-trick against Bournemouth. Rumours that Premier League sides are interested. What have you heard? Would you be expecting him to leave? Are you hopeful that you'll hold on to him?
This is, I suppose, another difference of being part of the Pozzo thing now. If he left, would I be worried? Not as much as I would have been when Danny Graham and when Marvin Sordell left. You know, Troy's come a long way since he joined us. You know, he came to us from Warsaw, spent 3 months in jail, missed the first couple of months of last season because he was in jail still. Came out, sorted himself out, has sort of, you get an idea that experience sort of got his head straight and focused him a little bit. I think if he did leave, I don't think it's anything to do with on pitch. I think you see what the boys are like on Twitter and his sort of place in that. If he's a big character in the changing room, that would probably be a bigger worry for me, I think, than, you know, one of our new boys from Udinese this year, Fabrini, looks just special. And you're thinking, now we want to see more of you, and he needs to get some game time. So I'm not worried that, you know, we would lose goals this year. I'm sure they would come from somewhere. And that's the thing about this setup. We have a quality squad rather than players that we're developing and getting rid of before the next bunch of players are sort of ready to take over.
Yeah, so it's a steady build rather than a patchwork.
Yeah, and I kind of liken that to, that's what Udinese have done well, and that's what Arsenal haven't done well. You know, Arsenal have lost these players, and the players aren't quite ready to take over. So that's sort of, I'm not saying we're the same as Arsenal, but the setup that they've got is deep enough for us to be able to be okay if someone like Troy Deeney does go off.
Yeah, now obviously the big headline from the weekend was obviously the scoreline for your guys, 6-1. Was it an actual 6-1, or do you think the scoreline didn't quite reflect the game?
If you look across the 90 minutes, it didn't reflect the game. The first half, we went in at 1-1, and that was sort of right. If Bournemouth had gone in Bournemouth 2-1 up, that would have been sort of all right. But it's a 90-minute game. Whatever happened at half-time, Zola got them sorted out, got them playing right. The small mistakes that we were having in the first half were gone, and you know, we kicked into what, you know, the Watford we love to watch and see under Zola. And when that got into gear, that was hard for them to sort of stop, especially when you, I think a club like Bournemouth, they don't have the depth in terms of their bench. So their options in terms of coming on were limited. We were 4-1 up and put on an Italian international. So Fabbrini, so that's like going, wow, how far have we come? So
Bournemouth side, by any chance?
Sorry?
Was Ian Hart in that Bournemouth side?
I can't remember. Yes, he came on at half time. Yes, he came on.
Came on at half time and so they conceded 5 goals.
Yeah, trying to stop the run. Surprise, surprise.
There we go.
So it's a bit different, but you know, you look at Bournemouth. If they maybe have scored their second, they'd gone 2-1 up. That might have been different. But there's a point where, you know, we got two and then three and then they dropped and then we sort of took control and abused where they were at that point. But they are a very good team. You know, they could do very well in this league, I think.
Lovely stuff. Just quickly, a couple more questions before we let you go. Obviously, we weren't in the same division last year, but, you know, we're back and you've seen plenty of, I imagine you've seen plenty of these dour 0-0s between Reading and Watford over the years. Mm. Other than a dodgy linesman giving us a ghost goal, is there anyone in the Reading team you're worried about at the weekend?
We said in our pre-season podcast that, you know, coming down, you aren't that different from the team that went up. So there's an organisation, there's a team that's done this before, has battled in the Championship. So that's always a worry in terms of for what we, you know, the possibilities of taking on Reading.
If we ask you to narrow your colours to the mast, then score prediction?
I'm going to go 2-1 Watford.
Okay, fair enough. Stick being loyal, we like that. We like that. Well, thanks very much, John. Obviously, we'll be hearing your voice throughout the show. It's done, actually. But if anyone wants to check out the podcast or follow you guys on Twitter, where can they go?
The website's fromtherookeryend.com.
Fromtherookeryend.com, yeah, and on Twitter?
We're a variety. I'm at rookeryjohn, there's at rookerymike, and then there's Jace Bailey.
Lovely stuff. Well, thanks very much, John. All the best of luck for the weekend, and hopefully we'll have you on again for the two teams meet again.
Cheers, boys.
Lovely. Thanks a lot. Cheers, John.
Bye.
Ta-da.
The View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping all this week's action.
Thanks very much to John, and check out the podcast. The guy's been doing it for a while, and I've listened a couple of times. It's a good listen, so please check it out. Right, moving on then to any other business. A couple of little bits of news popping up in this week. Something that popped on my Facebook feed this afternoon. Reading's next friendly will be against the Oman national team at the Medeski Stadium on Saturday, the 7th of September, while the international break is on. Any thoughts, guys? Bit of a weird one.
Slightly left field.
Yeah. Just a bit unexpected. I think, you know, getting the competitive games in is obviously a good idea. However, I'm not really sure the level that Oman play at. I mean, I've checked through their squad on Wikipedia, admittedly, but in the last 2 years, Ali Alhabsi's the only player that plays outside sort of Oman or the Middle East for the Oman national team. So, you know, you don't really know what level they're going to be at. I mean,
good test for strikers then.
Oh, yeah. At least they'll be able to find the net, you'd hope. It's obviously good to get a competitive game.
I think the thing is about it, I mean, last year we went to Ireland and had a similar sort of game during internationals. I think what we've got to remember about this is it's still early season. There's a lot of players that won't be fully fit. It's just to give them a run out. I'm sure you'll see players that haven't started yet getting an hour, 75 minutes. Yeah. Just have a run out. It can't hurt. Most of the international players who start every week are not going to be here anyway. They should beat them. It's just a run out.
It's part of the club strengthening the links, isn't it? I know they set up some academies and bits and bobs in Oman last year, so all strengthening links. Jay Tubb got a hat-trick in that Ireland game last year. If only we'd paid attention to that.
Yeah, maybe.
And then put him up front, we might have stayed up. Jay Tubb, 25 goals.
And if we can sell one shirt in Oman, it'd be well worth it, I thought.
Well, why not? I was going to say, Alhabsi's last action against Reading, dropping the ball into his own net. Robson Carly,
lost
that
game
in a game we shouldn't have lost.
Oh yeah, fantastic. Oh no, I think up at the JJB, the DW Stadium now, as it's now known.
But it's good that we're getting these international links. You know, we talk about Galatasaray, we talk about the other countries that we're setting up in Mauritius, Oman. Yeah. You know, it's becoming a worldwide brand.
Yeah, my only slight concern is do the players really need? I mean, Oman. I would imagine Oman will be taking it fairly seriously.
It's a big game for them
because I don't know if they're in the midst of their qualification campaign or whatnot, but a lot of players have a points prove, and you just worry, is one of their players going to go in a bit hard on
Well, we don't even know what level they're at. I mean, it could be a pub football team, basically, and go out whacking everyone.
So, with all due respect, you know, one of them missed time to tackle and takes out, you know, say one of them goes in too hard and McCarthy's playing and we lose McCarthy for the season, you know. Do you really want to take that risk playing a fairly competitive
I'm not sure McCarthy a player. I think you're more likely to have the third choice. Taylor might get a game. It'd be basically players that are well down the squad, and if they get injured, I don't think anyone's really going to miss half of them.
So. The thing is, it would probably have been behind closed doors anyway, so you know they're opening up the stadium.
I think no one would have gone. I think it's for tenner we see as well.
Yeah, tenner.
That's a bit optimistic.
£10 for adults, £5 for concessions. So, I suppose if you're at a loose end with the kids on that day, why not go down? Said it. No one's forcing you to go as season ticket holder. So, fair enough, I think. A lukewarm reception, but I think the thumb's just about raised above the level for me. Right, moving on then. Star, guys? Either of you two a member of Star? Putting you on the spot here now.
I am actually, yeah.
Yeah, Johnny's in Star?
No, I'm not.
You're not in Star? No. Well, to tell you about Star, the Supporters Trust at Reading, and maybe why you should get involved, is Richard Langley, who is the Vice Chairman for Star this year, and we can chat to him now.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog.
On thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, so I'm joined now by Richard. Richard, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Just to double check, you are the Vice Chairman of Star, is that all right?
I am indeed.
And occasional contributor to the Tarlhurst End as well, I should say as well. So you've written a couple of things for us over the years.
Yeah, I try my best.
Very, very much so, and very much appreciated as well. Well, we've got you on in sort of with your Star hat on. For those that don't know, tell us briefly what Star is, who's in it, and what do you guys do?
Well, Star is the Supporters Trust at Reading. We're based in the little hut round the back of the East Stand. And the main things that we do is we organise coach travel to all every away game that Reading play during the season, including cup games and league games. We organise fans forums. We organise quiz nights. We organise lots of events that fans can get involved in. We get involved in handing the Player of the Season award out. This season, we are sponsoring the Golden Gamble. And we also have the unique opportunity to directly talk to the club through their board meetings roughly every month. We had one this morning. It was fantastic as usual. It's always nice to see what the club think about us and give some feedback to the club. But yeah, that's generally what we do. We've got a board. Paul Ellix is the chairman. I'm obviously the vice chair. We've got Jerry McCreevy, who's our treasurer. Teresa Hicks, who's secretary. We've got Wendy and Nathan Wakefield, who are involved in events and reading matter. Chris Witcher, safety and community. Colin Bishop and Melanie Bishop, both of whom are involved in the travel. I'm sure anyone who's travelled with us over the seasons will know intimately about Colin and Mel. We've got Helen Bullen, who's community, social media. We've got Ian Maynard, who's also media and community. And we've got Dave Strawn, who's also community. We've got two more members, which is Teresa Buckingham and Roger Titford. Those are two of our newest board members, and they get involved in a number of different tasks here and there, all around our board. We've got three co-opted board members as well. Trevor Mossman, who's our Exiles coordinator. He's based in the north of England, so doesn't really get to many of our meetings. We've got Pete Vickery, who's involved in putting out our reading matters and doing notice boards around the stadium. And we've also got Ian Holt, who's in charge of doing all our website stuff and all our sort of getting the QR codes for our programme page sorted in that kind.
Very nice, very nice. Well, as you said, you mentioned one of your biggest events every year is the Fans Forum. It happened a couple of weeks ago. I know it's a closed house meeting, so you can't tell us too much about what was said by Nigel and other people at the meeting. But how did it go? What are your general impressions of the manager?
It went fantastically. I think one of the barometers we always look for is the number of people that come of an evening. I mean, we were expecting sort of roughly about 200 or so people. Nearly more than 300 turned up in the end. We had a couple of hundred joiners on the night who joined up just for the Fans Forum. And I'd say it was our best Fans Forum we've held to date. Nigel was fantastic. He took his time with all his answers. He gave very thorough answers to all the questions we asked. He was very open with regards to team matters. and to where he sees us this season, what he'd like to do with the squad. We talked about his playing career as a goalkeeper. We talked about his managerial career. And he was fabulous. I maintain that along with coach travel, joining staff for a tenner if you're an adult or a fiver if you're a kid or a senior, going to fans forums, we usually have two or three every season. It pays for itself, really. You get to see the managers, see the players, see some of the other staff sometimes. And you see other clubs that you have to pay on the night to see five or six fans forums a season, and you have to pay £50, whereas you pay your £10 membership fee and you get to come to all these events for free.
Yeah, I mean, from a completely personal point of view, I've been to a couple. I didn't make this year's one, but I made the last one with Brian McDermott and a couple of other ones. And they are good fun, good evenings. Things like the quiz night later in the year is always a good laugh as well. So, I've got nothing but praise for what you guys do on a personal level. But on the other side of the coin, there have been some concerns raised on portals like Hobnob, saying that Star Ice are bit of a closed shop because obviously what's said at the fans forum is generally supposed to stay in the room, and people are saying, well, you know, I'm paying a tenner and I don't go to fans forums, you know, or really travel on a coach, you know, why should I have to do that to interact with Star? Because I suppose some people say, well, you're supposed to be representing all the fans, not just your members. What would you say to those people who have those concerns?
I think they've got a perfectly rational sort of case. I mean, this season, certainly for the first time that I've noticed it, we've, for our members that couldn't get here this year, we've posted out one of our email newsletters with a synopsis of the fans forum. So any member that couldn't get there could read a pretty in-depth synopsis of what the manager said. But I completely agree that Storm may seem like a closed shop. We'd love to change that. We'd love to change that at Star. We'd love to get more involved with things like Hobnob. I mean, Hobnob is, we see it as a bit of a problem because it's unmoderated. So, for example, if we post something that we know is well-meaning and it's just a sort of a comment to fans, we know that it could quite easily be taken out of hand and the issue could escalate very quickly. And we'd have a problem on our hands and it'll probably be bad publicity for us. So we do look to use Hobnob as a message board. We haven't been very involved recently, but we are looking to get more integrated back on Hobnob. We'd love people to get involved with their queries, with their questions, with their suggestions. I mean, you can email us at info@starreading.org, and you can tell us what you think. You can tell us whether we're not doing things right, you'd like us to do things differently. You'll find all our contact details in the program that you buy at home games. We write our sort of star page every home game, I mean, we're always looking for sort of suggestions. We're always looking for new members, for new board members. We'd love more people to try and get on the board.
How often are your elections? When's the next one?
So the elections are closed for this season. The election process runs from the start from our AGM, which is on the 3rd of September, and closes in May. So if someone fancies getting on the board, they need to get two fellow Star members who could be their friends, could be two people who know them in the organisation, get them to sign their form, and we'll certainly consider their election.
Brilliant. Well, what have you guys got any plans for the season ahead? Anything new that's coming on sort of the agenda? I know you mentioned you're sponsoring the Golden Gamble this year. What can we sort of look forward to over the coming 12 months?
Well, you can look forward to our pieces in the programme to start off with. This coming Saturday, I've written the piece. Inspired by Clark Carlisle's programme last night on BBC with regards to suicide and depression in football. That's well worth a read. We've got the AGM on the 3rd of September, which is followed by our first Players Fans Forum. We're going to have three players. We're not sure who those players are yet, but that information will be posted out nearer the time. We've obviously got all the coach trips coming up. We've got Blackpool. We've got Yeovil. We've got quizzes coming up in the new year. We've got more fans forums. And we're going to do our Helping with the Player of the Season. We've got another membership drive on Saturday. So if people are interested in joining up, we'll be outside the Star Hut from about sort of 12:30. If you fancy joining up on Saturday. And I think as the year goes on, we'll be putting more events in our calendar. We're certainly, we're working with the club to introduce star stand reps for all the stands, which will sort of involve a T-shirt or something identifying us as star members, where people can come and ask for general information about star and about issues at the club and about submitting questions and things like that. So as the season goes on, we'll add more events to our calendar, and our members and anyone reading the Star website will be the first people to know.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for that. Thanks for joining us, Richard.
No problem. Anytime. Cheers.
Thanks a lot to that.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business?
Right, thanks very much to Richard. Now it's time for some feedback from you guys. Thanks to everyone who's left it on Twitter and on Facebook and various places. Remember, if you're on Twitter, if you put hashtag TTE podcast, it's very easy for us to find, and your comment will get to us far easier. But if you do want to drop us an email, you've heard the stings throughout the show, but it's thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, and Facebook is facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. You also get us individually on Twitter. You're at Weston Williams still?
At Weston Williams still.
Yeah. Johnny?
At John Afon. I won't spell it out. Have a bit of fun trying to find me.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm at Wimby, although I'm never really tweeting. So, but you know, still tweet me there. And if you've got a comment. And we'll try and get it on the show. Right, so without further ado, Fresh Reading has commented on the Bolton game, saying it wasn't a bad result, but shows how important clean sheets are going to be. Unlucky not to win in the second half. In terms of transfers, it's painfully obvious we need a striker. However, I would be very excited to see Gozi Ugwu involved on Saturday. I think we'll come on to Gozi with another question we've got a little bit later on the under-21s. But moving on, Wade Warren. We need a new striker and Mariapa back in the squad if we want to be contenders this season, lads. And Sam Stevenson says, striker, striker, striker. Positive start to the season, though. So a bit of a theme going there, guys.
I think so. Striker's definitely a theme running through these first three questions. Again, we talked about this last week. Getting strikers, they're expensive and they only get sold in the very last minute most of the time. Very rarely does a striker go early unless someone's paying stupid money for him.
I think we're all in agreement that we'd like to see an upgrade. But if the window did slam shut and this is it, would you be really worried? Would you be saying, oh, we're not going to get up automatically?
I'd be worried if Pogrebnyak didn't return to the kind of form that... Well, he hasn't shown it for us, but he's shown it for Fulham when he was there for half a year, if he actually can be bothered, essentially. Because I think there's a certain part of him that just he doesn't want to be.
Paul Grebnyak on paper should be too good for this league, but he clearly hasn't shown anything.
For me, if he's here when the window shuts, then he'll have no excuse. He'll have to get his head down because obviously no clubs want to buy him. So he's going to have to get his head down and go, you know what, I'm going to try and play my way either into a January move or whatnot. No, for me, Jason Roberts is still a bit of an X factor. He could come back and be good. I think the odds are probably balanced against it, but...
I think Jason Roberts, when he gets fit, he's going to be a 20-minute, 25-minute end-of-the-game sort of player. I can't see him starting too many. I mean, he's 35 now. What are we expecting from the bloke? He's going to be injury-prone now, from now on to the end of his career, which will probably be the end of this season. If you see him, it'd be in little spells. I can't see him starting and playing 10, 15 games for us.
Yeah, and as for Wade's point on Adrian Mariapa... We said at the start of the season, we thought it'd be him and Morrison. I still think he's one, you know, he's in the top two, certainly, for central defenders, and it's a mystery to me.
The thing I don't get about Mariapa, not even being on the bench, is the fact that he can play at right back as well, and he has done throughout his career. Now, if you've got a player who can play right back and centre back, that gives you another option to put a more forward-thinking player on the bench.
Yeah, they could get rid of Kelly off the bench and put Samuel or Obita, couldn't they?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Strange.
Yeah, very strange. Right, moving on. Chris Hartley says, hi guys, are we worried about the slow starts to games? We've conceded 2 goals in the first 20 minutes and keep up the good work on the show. Thanks very much, Chris. Tom, who posts as at Timothy Dustbin, says, do you think players such as Defoe would be willing to come to the Championship to play for QPR, reportedly? And what importance do you think the domestic cups are going to be for both Anton and Nigel this season? Any thoughts on those couple guys?
Money.
Yep, if you're paying stupid money, you can get anyone into a championship.
Defoe was linked with us last year.
Yeah.
In the Premier League.
Again, it's just, if you're going to give him 75 grand a week, he'd come and play in the Championship. It's as simple as that.
Would he though?
He would. Mm. I'm sure he would.
I'm not convinced in a World Cup year he'll do it.
5-year deal?
Not in a World Cup year. I can't see it. I wouldn't be completely stunned and fall off my chair if it happened, but for a striker, Tottenham haven't got a lot of options. When he went off injured in a friendly the other day, they had Harry Kane to come on. I know they've signed Soldado, but I can't see Tottenham getting rid of him, and I can't see why, as I said, in a World Cup year, he's going to want to drop down to the Championship. QPR don't need him anyway.
Yeah, but you say that, then if Soldado's playing every week and Defoe's being a bit part player and not really getting a game, is it a QPR and he hits 30 goals a season?
It might be another one like we got with Pogrebniak. Tottenham want to get rid of him. Perhaps he doesn't fit Andre Villas-Boas' sort of plans or blueprint for what he wants from a striker. It might be that they need to get rid of Defoe before they can bring someone in.
Don't see it, but I suppose strange things have happened. And the other point is about domestic cups. I think, we'll find out, obviously, when they play Peterborough in a couple of weeks' time for the League Cup. FA Cup's a long way away now, but...
Personally, I'm not too bothered about a domestic cup run. I think it was fun while we went to the quarterfinals 2 years in a row, and, you know, we could have got to the semis, but I think the main concentration is going to be on getting back up to the Premier League. But the thing I would say is we've got a big squad now.
Yeah, I would say we've got a big squad. There's a lot of players that won't be playing. Also, cup runs have been a catalyst for us to turn the season around the last couple of seasons. And again, if they have a cup run, I think it would be because, you know, don't get me wrong, they're trying, but it means that the players that are fringe players are putting in good performances in the cup, and that's the only way to go.
Yeah, financially for the coffers as well, with the financial fair play and stuff, all these sort of cup runs happen. So I think they'll take them, but I agree with both of you. I think, you know, it's going to be very much up to the squad players to, you know, if they get a couple of good draws, you know, teams can make, you know, Millwall made an FA Cup final on the back of, I think they only played, what was it, Man United in the final was their first Premier League team. Yeah. So strange things have happened.
Well, have a think about it. I mean, if you look at the side, just imagine now we was picking a side for a cup game and we didn't pick any of the starting 11. What sort of team would we put out? Were you looking at Federici?
Yeah, Kelly.
Cummins, Kelly, Gorks, Mariappa, Williams, Akpan, Ledgerwood, players like that. You'd have wingers like Robson Kanu, McEnough, Abita.
Pogrebniak. That's a good team. That's a really good team.
Where would that team finish in the Championship? It'd probably finish top 10, so you're still putting out a decent side.
We shouldn't play Oman, we should just play Reading.
Reading versus the old intra-squad friendly.
I'll pay a tenner to see that.
Yeah, I would too.
Interesting. I think they had that for Murty's testimonial, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. Gilfy scored a belter.
But it's a fair point, though, when you look at that side. It's still a good team,
Yeah, very much got a good chance to get through in the cup competitions. Instead of that, we'll get beat 3-0 by Peterborough now. Be academic.
You see how that changed very quickly, though. Our thoughts about us just a couple of times. Well, yeah, that's quite a good side in the cup,
Well, it's worth paying the ticket. If it was a home game, I'd go, but I'm not going to London Road again. Did it in the Championship season. And
that was one of the two games we lost, wasn't it?
It was.
The running, and just Chris's point earlier, just about conceding goals early on. I think we addressed it when we were looking at the Bolton game. I think it's just a case of the team having to gel and people getting their roles. So
again, it's
too early to shot too many.
Giving them 4 or 5 games and we might be conceding goals after second half starts. So I shouldn't worry about it too much. They have conceded goals early, but again, they haven't played together, have they, as a back four?
Agreed. And the final comment comes from AD Smith on Facebook. He said, in the under-21 game against Newcastle, Gozie Ugwu looked more inspired and talented than I've seen the first team strikers be in ages. Does he deserve a call-up? He's obviously referring to the 4-2 win at the Badeski against Newcastle. I think I'm right in saying none of us actually went to the game, but we've seen the highlights and his goals, good effort. And that under-21 side has got a lot of promise. Is he ready?
You'd have to put him in to see, wouldn't you? But obviously the management don't think so, and they're there every day, so they know a lot better than us. Again, he's under-21s. It's a different level of football. How are they all trying? You don't know. You can't really judge it on a Championship game.
He's had limited Football League experience from doing the loan reports last year. He was at Plymouth and Yeovil. He was pretty unlucky with injuries, kept doing his hamstrings in, and it sort of stopped him getting any sort of running the team. But outside of a couple of goals, he didn't set the world on fire. So I don't know. I think it's a lot to chuck a guy into a promotion contending team.
Perhaps we'll see him up at Peterborough. You know, I think Atkins, as well as they'll be talking about rotating the side so that we get the first team, perhaps he'll bring in a few youth players as well and say, show me what you can do. I saw it with Samuel last year when he was on the bench up at one of the Premier League games.
Sunderland.
So, you know, perhaps it'll be a similar situation. If you perform in training, then you could...
And with Peterborough just dropping out of the Championship, it's a good yardstick to try and judge him on it. again, if he does well, then good luck to him. But again, if he was that good, then the managers would.
Yeah, I still think for the likes of Samuel Obita and Ugwu and players like that, that they do need a decent loan spell behind them. But I think a lot of managers have been saying that this under 21 league is quite good and competitive. So whether they want to keep him in house for a bit longer, I don't know. But you know, I certainly think they need a solid run. You know, players like Guilfi had a good run at Crewe, was it? And players like Pearce and Carachan did well at Bournemouth. I think you need that good, solid league loan spell behind you before you bring them in, especially in the Championship.
Because there's a massive difference between playing sort of under-21s football and then men's football.
Yeah.
Even at a local level, you come from a boys' team to playing a men's team. There's a hell of a difference. And there's a lot of experienced players in that Championship. And it would be too much to ask of him straight away.
Yeah, very much agreed. Right, so that's about it for this week, I think. Covered just about everything. If you fancy more insight and analysis, then head over to the Tarlhurst End website now at www.thetarlhurstend.com. As well as being able to read Becca's match report and player ratings from Bolton, we've got lots of other content up. We've got Hoops' tweets of the week, which is always a good, funny read. It's got some lookalikes in this week, some good ones. I'm not going to spoil it, but go over there and check it out. You've got Chip Harp's chronicles of being a US-based Reading fan and the struggles of trying to find Championship football on the telly to watch. We've also got loads of other bits and bobs. Johnny, I'm sure you'll have a preview up this week. I'm putting you on the spot now.
You will have one up. Or you're not on the podcast next week. It'll be up on Thursday.
My finger's precariously over the trapdoor. John, we've asked John for some questions as well. Regular from the Town End segment, so he'll be previewing it from a Watford point of view. And lots of other content and bits and bobs up on the site. So just follow us on Twitter. Again, we've been spamming it throughout the show, but at the Tarlhurst End is your best place to find us, or on Facebook or all those other various social media. We've got a thread in Hobnob as well, and on the Royals Rendezvous as well. So plenty of places to get in contact. If you've got any suggestions, any feedback, anything, just fire it over and we'll be more than happy to get involved. And on that note, if you want to actually write for us or, you know, get involved with the podcast again, just send an email. You know, it's a fan site. It's by fans, for fans. We're not getting paid to do this. We'll take all the help we can get at the end of the day. No, we'd like to put our feet, wouldn't we?
I like that. I said for 5 years I'm not getting paid for this in the hope that someone would pay me one day.
Didn't you have that weird link with, was it Carlsberg or someone?
It's Heineken.
Heineken.
Yeah, and that was near enough the end of our flirt with footballfancast.com because we were talking about drink drivers and it didn't go down too well with advertisers.
No, we'll keep it. We'll get over that one, yeah. But yeah, please, by all means, guys, if you do want to get involved, just drop us an email. We'll be delighted to hear from you. So that's us done for the week. Guys, thanks very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. We'll hopefully be recording. Not sure what day next week. We'll have to keep you updated on Twitter and whatnot. But this show will hopefully pop up in your iTunes subscription anyway, or wherever you get the podcast. So stay tuned there. Right, thanks very much. Here's the 3 points of Watford.
Definitely.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.